You know, there's several people out there who say that you're in one of two categories. You either think Die Hard is a Christmas movie, or you're wrong. Now, here's the thing I would say. Die Hard 2 is also a Christmas movie. And if you don't agree with me, all I gotta say is, yippee-ki-yay, motherfuckers!
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk. We talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Guilty Movie Pleasures.
Whoa. This is me on the drive over here. I was late from Hollywood. We're starting late because I got stuck at a callback, and then I nearly got in two accidents on the way over here, and this was the music. I was like a really lame John McClane driving in the rain in LA.
I mean, he doesn't do a lot of driving.
No, he doesn't. So hey, until Die Hard with a Vengeance, then he does a bunch. Well, technically, Samuel L. Jackson does most of the driving in that. So, anyways,
there you go.
Hey, we're here.
Let's get technical.
We're an hour late, but let's do this because I want to get into this. First and foremost,
Before you start, I do want to say the perfect cold open would have been what you said before we started, which was just yippee-ki-yay, motherfuckers.
And then I extended it.
And then you extended it a little bit before we started, and then the actual cold open became like a 5-minute monologue.
Whatever.
I don't know what happened.
I don't know. I drank some coffee. I got excited.
It was good. It was good.
Whatever. Hey, I do want to give a shout out to the original host of Guilty Movie Pleasures, Josh McCouga, Wildman McCouga. Die Hard, he posted something on Twitter today with Collider, how Die Hard is one of his favorite Christmas movies, if not his favorite Christmas movie. And he and Steve, I've done so many of these I don't remember, but I remember we did an episode. Some host on this show with McCouga did an episode of Die Hard, so watch it, because it's great. But we wanted to talk about Die Hard 2, because I watched Die Hard... Well, first off, hey, I'm Ben Begley, I'm your host. Forgot to do that. And with me, as always...
I'm Jesse McIntosh.
Yeah, for those of you just tuning in, because you're like, Die Hard 2, I love that movie. Who are these jackasses?
Yeah.
Now you know.
We are going to curse today.
We neuter it because we try and get more listeners. We try and Deadpool, Once Upon a Deadpool PG-13 this shit, but not today.
Not today.
Fuck that. It's going off the rails.
Ben and Jesse are raw today. You can use that in the advertising for this episode. Ben and Jesse are raw.
We are raw.
Ben and Jesse do it raw.
I don't know if you should say.
I don't know.
I mean,
I'm
you
just
could.
Winging it right
it
now.
Might get more views.
Listen, do whatever you got to do, guys.
Anyway, so. Every year, and my wife still hasn't watched Die Hard, but every year, I normally watch, like, my staples are It's a Wonderful Life, Christmas Vacation, Home Alone, Elf. Those are, like, the sentimental, like, feel-good Christmas movies. But lately, I've loved to throw in unconventional Christmas movies in there. Like, I love Krampus, which we covered last year for the guy who did Trick or Treat. I'm blanking on his name right now. But anyways, and that's awesome. Gremlins is one of my favorites. Die Hard has become a staple now. Every Christmas, I have to watch Die Hard. Now I have a machine gun. Ho, ho, ho. It's just so good. Die Hard, and several critics have already said this, it's on like the AFI Top 100, all that stuff. To me and millions of other people, Die Hard is a perfect action film. It's structurally perfect. It doesn't go too far in the realm of disbelief where you're like, this is absurd. John McClane feels like an everyday man who's in the wrong place at the wrong time and deals with what he can uses what he can to deal with the situation. And then Die Hard 2, I remember I saw Die Hard 2 shortly after seeing Die Hard 1 when I was younger on VHS, and I thought, the only thing that stuck out in my mind is I thought it was really lame how he killed all the bad guys in the end, because I wanted more shoot 'em up or whatever. I don't know. But so I discounted that movie for a while, and I've since revisited it a couple times. And watching it again this time, I love this movie. I always thought it went one, three, two, four, and then it's sad they never made a fifth one. They did. It's just that terrible. But now I think it goes 1, 2, 3, 4, because this movie's, although 3 is great, so maybe they're tied. But this movie's awesome. It's super fun. It definitely feels like a sequel to Die Hard, where they up the ante on everything, because this is the first step in absurdity, where he like ejects himself from the plane as it's blowing up. But it still all kind of feels like it could happen, kind of. The first one I feel like is totally in the realm of action movie realism. This one gets a little absurd, but I love it. Now that I've said that, Jesse, what are your thoughts on the Die Hard franchise?
Yeah, I also loved this movie, and I think that it's necessary to have seen the first one in order to love this movie.
Yes, yes. There's a ton of homages and nods.
There's a ton of homages, but also like the point that you were touching on where they like amped it up. Mm-hmm. If you watch this without the context of the first one, you might think that it was
silly
and absurd and like a little bit too much.
Yeah.
But having like... having the threshold already set of like this is what a Die Hard movie is, they had a little bit of leeway to go above what they did the first time. But I did find myself wondering, because you mentioned in the first one you feel like he wasn't every man, just caught in the wrong place. This one did not feel like that to me. This one I was wondering the whole time, he obviously like is chasing this.
Yeah.
Why isn't he SWAT? Why is he just like LAPD without other ambition?
He's the lieutenant now in LAPD, they say.
Okay, but like, yeah.
Why isn't he Jack Bauer in the counterterrorism unit or something? Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Name me another just police officer of any rank who would jump from a helicopter to the wing of a plane in the name of justice.
Have you seen part 4?
I have not.
He hangs on the wing of an F-18 as it's crashing into a bridge and slides off and narrowly misses getting. And then he also launches a car off a ramp and kills a helicopter with
it. Right. So he's chasing it. You know what I mean? Like he's a junkie at this point.
I think he gets a taste of it in one, and then like he's hesitant in this, but as soon as he gets that taste, it's just like, whew, he is. He's a junkie.
Yeah.
He's an action junkie, whether he wants to or not.
Because like he could, I mean, they set it up so that the police officers there are useless, but why?
Useless.
Yeah, but like, what is he doing, honestly? Like chasing people into restricted areas and like
he's got
getting himself involved in all this anyway. He's just waiting for his wife.
He's John fucking McClane, man.
I guess.
That's what you do when you're John McClane.
I guess.
He's got that intuition, that gut, that hunch.
He sure does. Sure does. It was, but the movie is a lot of fun.
You'd never seen this.
I had not seen this one.
You'd seen the first one.
I'd seen the first one.
I had to clear that with you because I was going to, whew.
We were going to fist fight.
We may have fist fought.
Yeah. On set.
What did you think of the first one?
The first one was great. I love the first one. And the franchise is a lot of fun.
Have you seen the other ones?
I've seen, well, so I said no to 4, but was that the one with Justin Long?
Yes.
So then I have seen that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've seen those 3, 1, 2, and 4.
Okay. But you didn't see 3 with Samuel Jackson?
I did not see 3.
Oh, that one's great. I think, I don't know. I have to rewatch it now because they might be tied because this one feels more akin to Die Hard, and Die Hard with a Vengeance starts heading more towards Live Free or Die Hard territory where it's like bigger and crazier. But, man, Sam Jackson and Bruce Willis have some great chemistry in that movie. They're so fun together.
I mean, Bruce Willis is great as this character.
Yeah, he's great.
He's great.
It makes me wish he cared more about characters now. He does when he's in an M. Night Shyamalan movie or, like, in Looper with Rian Johnson directing. When he's with a director he cares about, it's awesome. When he's doing something like Death Wish or these other movies, like, he just...
Or Friends.
He just felt... Oh, Friends, am I right? I love Bruce Willis, but I feel like lately he's just been dialing in these performances, and I want him... I think Glass is going to be a return to form for him playing his character from Unbreakable
again. Yeah, I hope so, because he's, as an action star, he's great.
He's great.
He's great.
Bruce Willis, please, come back to us in full force. We love it. So let's do this plot in under 3 minutes, because we got a ton of sound clips, a ton of awesome action to talk about, a ton of bad guys that get offed left and right. So let's do this, Steve. You ready?
I'm ready.
Let's do it.
All right, guys. Here we go.
Here, are we going to do it?
3.
We're going to do it.
I'm ready to do it.
1. Go.
Okay, so we start off where there's Bruce Willis is waiting in the airport. He's late for his wife's plane is late. He's hanging out there. He's getting a ticket from the cop, and then there's a cutaway to the guy who played Death in Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey is doing naked Tai Chi, and we're hearing all this stuff about this drug lord Esperanza who's coming in on this military plane, and all these things with this Colonel Stewart who's a naked guy, and then we cut to the airport again where we're establishing like all all the traffic and all the craziness, and John McClane sees these two nefarious characters walking about, and he clocks them. The cops don't notice anything. He goes after them. A fight ensues. He kills the one in a luggage smasher, whatever that thing is, and smashes his head, and then gets in trouble with the... And he's introduced to the tower head and the chief of... The captain there.
Yes.
Played by the dude from NYPD Blue.
And he tells him to basically get lost, and...
We got this here, all right?
Yeah, but he doesn't want to go upstairs.
They're just
the
luggage thieves.
He just wants to let they're luggage thieves. There's nothing else going on here, right? Luggage thieves. So Bruce Willis goes back down, and he fingerprints the guy, and he sends it to the dad from Family Matters.
Yep.
Who eventually sends it back.
Officer Winslow is what I like to call him.
They realize that the guy has been officially dead for 2 years.
Part of a black ops group.
Right, and the plane's coming in with Esperanza on it, so they're like, this is obviously what's going on here. And so they start to have a hunch.
And then they figure out, and they kill all the communications and all the runways, so none of the planes can land or get any communications from the tower. So then the one dude who's the tech guy, he figures out, we'll go to this other tower where we can rig up a signal there. They take SWAT, but they realize, this was a trap. The bad guys already planned this. Colonel Stewart knew you were going to do this. They take out all their top guys. All the SWAT get killed. John McClane kills T-1000 Robert Patrick and a bunch of other people. They realize it was and then they blow up the tower, and they're like, we're totally screwed.
And then they bring down the English plane. They're like, all right, because you did that, we're going to bring down the English plane. And so then the plane crashes and everyone in there dies.
Yeah, and he tries to wave it in, but he can't. Oh, God. And then he meets Marvin, the weird janitor guy. Yep. He gets through these, he goes through all these places, and then, then the plan, Esperanza's plan lands, and they find out that the church is where their main hub is, and the soldiers come, and they're like, hey, we're going to take care of this for you guys. And Jesse, how about you take it away?
And then they usher him out, and then they blow. Everything's rigged with C4, and they're like,
there's a shootout,
and
there's blanks.
And then the guy who came in is like trying to play it cool, but then it turns out that he's with Esperanza, and then they all meet up on the tarmac, and they get their plane, and they're about to fly away. And Bruce Willis is
he's
helicoptering
in. Yeah, news reporter helicopter. He helicopters in, gets on the wing, fights the one dude. He goes through the thing. He fights the other new death guy, and then he lights the plane on fire. Yippee-ki-yay. Hey, motherfucker, boom, him and Holly hang out, and then, hey, I'm the janitor guy.
Nice.
That's how you end the movie.
I'm the janitor guy.
Oh, yes. I think it's William Sadler. I think that's the guy's name, because somebody tweeted about it.
Yeah.
I got to find it, because I am going to hate myself if I don't figure this out, because I... William... Wait for it. Sadler, yes. Who knew we were going to do a marathon of William Sadler movies?
I knew. I manufactured it.
How great, though, is he? He's so menacing and creepy in this, and so hilarious.
And, like, super naked in the beginning.
Super
like,
naked.
Real, real naked.
We're, like, at the verge of seeing a ball hang out somewhere.
Like, if you looked in the mirror, because he was in the hotel room, and there was a mirror on one side, there was, like, a little dangle.
There's a dingle dangle?
Yeah, a little dangle.
I missed
a
dingle dangle, and
I was
watching it in 1080.
Because, you know why I was looking for it? Because I was watching it on demand on Cinemax, and in my head, I was like, if you're going to put your movie on Cinemax, you have to add nudity to it.
There's
got to
be some dangle.
Yeah, you got to add it.
You got
to... Even if it's not there, just to like be on brand.
I think it's a precursor for HBO now. I think everything has to have a dangle of some sort.
So I was like, there's got to be... And then like immediately there was a naked guy, and I was like, are they going to fucking dangle a dick in front of my face? And then they
hashtag dangle a dick, hashtag Cinemax.
Yeah.
So we start off, John McClane gets a ticket from the world's... biggest asshole cop. Merry Christmas. Hey, I got a ticket for you. You know? And then naked guy, like we already went. We saw the dangle. T-1000's in it. Robert Patrick. There's John Leguizamo randomly later on. He plays one of the henchmen. I caught him briefly. He's basically an extra. He's basically unless it's a guy that looks exactly like him. There's a dude in the church. Pops in for a second.
Okay.
It's crazy. I have to now research that. I just like to come in with half. You know, we're in an age where I don't have to be factually accurate about anything.
Absolutely
so.
Right about that.
And then John McClane calls Holly, his wife, and they have a little banter. Or no, she pages him and he calls her because it's the 90s and there's not cell phones. And this is the banter they have.
Honey, what are you doing? Where are you? Did you land yet?
Honey, it's the 90s, remember? Microchips, microwaves, faxes, air phones.
Hey, well, as far as I'm concerned, progress peaked with frozen pizza.
I love it. I just love that summation of an analog hero in an increasingly digital age.
Yeah, and I found myself, like, wondering, frozen pizza. I mean, I guess you can... I tend to microwave frozen pizza. I guess the bigger ones you cook in the oven.
Oh, no, yeah, you cook
those
in the
oven.
But
I'm thinking when I was a kid, we had, like, the little Celeste ones.
That probably poisoned all of us.
Yeah, probably. But
that were, like, you microwave them in plastic with, like, a metal sheet under them, and it's like, this is not healthy.
Yeah.
Or when you go to your school cafeteria, and they were, like, in the oven in plastic, and you're like, oh.
That doesn't seem safe.
Cool. Thanks, 80s, for poisoning our entire generation.
It was a funny, like, juxtaposition, because she said, it's the 90s. Like, it was brand new.
Yeah.
But now that we're watching it on a rewatch, 30 years later, it's like, it has both meanings. Like, it could, at the time, mean, like, look at all the new technology.
And now it could be like,
now it's like, look at all the old technology.
We have pagers.
Yeah, it's very funny.
Only police officers, drug dealers, and doctors had pagers, you know? I still have a pager that I never used. I got it later at, like, a Goodwill
for, like, 2012.
50 cents. And I was like, oh, sweet, I'll use this as a prop.
Yeah.
Never did.
Damn.
So,
there's still time.
Little thing. I love the interaction between bringing back the reporter from the first movie, Richard, I forget his last name in it, but they call him Dick the whole movie, which is hilarious. And he's kind of like a TMZ guy. There's some great banter between him and Holly. And the old, I love the old lady. She, I don't know if you noticed, she casually has a magazine with Lethal Weapon on the back of it.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
Yeah.
And I love that she brings out a taser, which apparently in the 90s you could bring a taser on your carry-on, in your purse.
Can you bring anything on a plane? Yeah,
apparently.
Good Lord.
Apparently.
The amount of stuff that they had was just...
And, like, the radio that listens into the cockpit.
Yeah.
Like, there was no security in the 90s.
Yeah, just, like, walking all around the plane, smoking,
just
tasering people for no reason. Yeah.
I mean, things have changed. Things have changed.
Yeah. And
for
then,
the better.
And when she brought it out, obviously that was a moment of, like, we're going to be using a taser.
It's like
later.
Chekhov's gun. It was Holly's seatmate's taser.
Right, but...
Doesn't have quite the ring.
But then when she used it, it was like the dude's just giving a report. Like, he wasn't even attacking anyone. He was just
Because of him, I know we're jumping way ahead, but because of me, he causes mass hysteria at the airport.
Yeah, but he was done.
Yeah.
There was no more imminent danger that he could have done.
But he deserved it.
Yeah, he deserved
it. His reaction after it, and we'll play the clip when we get to it, but his reaction after it, he looks like he's dead.
Yeah.
Because he just goes, huh, and then he falls to the ground, and he's like, I'm like, oh, God, it killed him.
Also, like, what the woman who produces the taser, what a bitch to be like, I tried it on my little dog. Like, what is wrong with you?
I have a similar taser, only it's tinier, and it's a 9-volt I got in Chinatown. You put a 9-volt battery in it.
Yeah.
And I may have told you this before, but I haven't told it on air, I don't think. I was shooting a sketch for my character, Stephen Mortimer, that I used to do, this really nerdy conspiracy theorist guy. And I had this conspiracy theory that when you taser yourself, you shit your pants. And so I was supposed to pretend to taser myself in the neck. And I was like, the safety's off, the battery's in there, but I'm not going to like... And when I went like this, my thumb slipped and I triggered it just for a second. And I'm holding the camera too. And I go, gah! And the camera flies out of my hand. Luckily, I was in my room and it landed on my bed. And I dropped to the ground. And I got up and it was literally like, oh. Because it made the whole side of my face numb and my neck... Felt like I had a kink in it for the rest of the day, but it literally was such a surge for a second that I went aah! And then dropped from a 9-volt battery.
Wow!
Hey, $20 in Chinatown. Never had to use it except on myself.
Hey, it's,
I didn't shit myself.
Listen, it's what we do for lightly watched internet videos.
I think it got like, and I even tried to like put in the thing. Guy shits himself in this video to like make it like, oh, this is hilarious. And I think I got like 100. It was not worth it.
Yeah.
And I called Renee and I was like, hey, I just tasered myself. And she's like, what? And I was like, I got to go. I got to finish shooting this sketch, but I'll call you after. So I hadn't even finished it yet. I still powered through. That's
good
dedication
for you, man.
To a lightly watched sketch. Anyways, that was a tangent we didn't need to go on, but it's fine. You like that, all 12 of you. So then we have McClane. He clocks the two suspicious bad guys. Man, there is an awesome, awesome fight scene that transpires.
There is also, right before that, there is an awful lot of undrunken beverages on tables. I just, like, that...
That bothered you?
It blew my mind.
Maybe everybody was like, oh, I'll have more time to drink this. My flight's late or on time.
But, like, even the hench, like the bad guys all had full beers in front of them, and then John McClane had a full drink.
I love that they all walk out of the hotel with their package, their Christmas presents, and their military boots in a fashion that, like, anybody clocking that would have been like, wait, and especially since Colonel Stewart's been in the news, it's like, wait a minute. you're famous, which the news reporter recognizes him.
Yeah.
Which I thought would play out more like, which John McClane eventually, that's how he finds
eventually,
out
but
Colonel
he,
Stewart.
He did a double take on him also.
Yeah.
Like, do I know you?
So he, John McClane clocks these two guys that are looking as suspicious as possible. Mm-hmm. They're full glasses of beer, weird present underneath that they nudge under when the cops go by, and they eye the cops. They're really not, for being black ops, they're really not good at looking
not
inconspicuous.
At all. Uh-uh.
They're in like tactical gear with like a hoodie, you know, and, they go in this in the luggage area, and they're setting up something in there. I don't really know.
Well, we found, wasn't it that they were like tapping into the communications in the tower?
Good thing you paid attention. And they, a fight ensues. Well, first off, John McClane shows up with his badge, like, "Hey, it's the cops. What are you doing here?" Just like, that's ballsy. And they start. Oh, they open fire on him. They fist fight. Dude, Stash McGee is what I like to call him.
Nice.
He gets, they're fighting up this belt that for some reason, I guess in the 90s, packages had to be flattened before going on a plane.
I don't know.
Either way, it flattens this dude's head and he's like jerking around as it's mashing his skull, which is awesome.
Yeah, I was.
And the other guy gets away scot-free, not Mr. Scot-free that our president tweeted about.
No.
Not Scott-free. Not Mr. Scot-free, the actual word.
I was worried about everyone's bag. Like, there were so many bags that got thrown off the belt.
I know, it's like,
and it was like, oh, how are they going to know? How are they going to get all these bags to the right places now?
There's terrorists at this airport, but Jesse's like, oh, I hope they didn't have anything important.
You know, this was like so much, like, obviously there's going to be a lot of work to rebuild this airport.
I love when you worry about the minutiae of things like this.
There was so much work that was going to need to be done to, like, sort these bags.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I thought when they were fighting is they were like, they were such good marksmen for like tiny objects, but they couldn't hit him. They like hit the aerosol can and they hit a light bulb, and they're just like the small objects around the room. They were like bullseye, every single one of them.
I mean,
but they could not hit John McClane.
Later on, when John McClane's on the snow speeder. Snow speeder?
Yeah. Snowmobile?
Snowmobile. Snow speeder would be Star Wars. They're shooting at him with machine guns, and they can't hit him. But anyways, that's what happens in action movies. So this whole fight ensues. He gets taken to the captain, played by NYPD Blue Dude. And
Dennis France.
Yeah. Anyways, so this is every police chief or captain from an 80s or 90s buddy cop action film, or just action film in general.
Captain Lorenzo?
Yeah.
John McClane.
Yeah, I know who you are. You're the asshole that just broke 7 FAA and 5 District of Columbia regulations running around my airport with a gun shooting at people. What do you call that shit?
Self-defense.
So good. I love it. Like, legit, every Lethal Weapon, 48 Hours, another 48 Hours, Beverly Hills Cop.
Bad Boys.
Every single action movie where it involves cops has to have this guy. And Last Action Hero, where they spoof that, and he's like, and he starts talking so fast, it's just gibberish.
Yeah.
It's incredible. But even though it's cliche, it works, because you need that guy to be like, screw you, I'm not going to help you. And I love the only thing he's worried about is not digging any deeper into these two guys with Glock whatever that get through metal detectors, like John McClane says, but that, you know, we got a Christmas rush, we're going to be screwed if we delay any flights. So really, the plane that crashes is on him, because he could have let people know way in advance.
Yeah, you got.
So he needs to be fired at the end, instead of just like tearing up a ticket like, it's Christmas! I just had 230 people murdered because I was a stick in the mud.
There was like, I want to say,
good impression.
Like,
well, how would Channing Tatum do it?
He would be like, hey man, you gotta just let go.
That's good. I didn't know what you were gonna say.
Yeah.
I was on,
I'm like lengthening the silence.
I was on pins and needles.
Progressively more and more as we go. So like 6 or 7 years ago, there was a gunman at LAX.
Yeah.
And one singular gunman.
Yeah.
And it shut down
the entire
airport.
Yes.
And they brought everyone out of the airport afterwards.
Yeah.
And it's like, you had gunfight.
Yes.
It wasn't just like one gunman walking around.
And what luggage thieves carry Glocks?
Right.
And you know,
it was an armed suitcase robbery, yeah. I guess.
He just really wanted somebody's negligee.
Yeah.
He was a negligee fan.
I mean, it was ripe for it, yeah. I guess. Yeah, that's the place to look.
This is in the same scene when the captain has told him, John McClane, to basically fuck off. And John McClane leaves, and on his way out, he gives him a zinger.
Hey, Carmine, let me ask you something. What sets off the metal detectors first? The lead in your ass or the shit in your brains?
Ooh.
I mean,
the lead in your
ass. I love that.
For sure.
But I guess just scientific, just from like a practical standpoint, I guess the lead in his ass.
Yeah, the shit in your brains is not going to. It's not going to trigger a metal detector.
Not in the 90s.
Unless you shat metal.
Wait. If he had lead in his ass.
And then he shat and then put it in his brain.
Now we need a 90-minute documentary explaining this sound clip. Okay, so then we already said that he gets the fingerprints from the stiff, sends it to Officer Winslow, which is what I like to call him, even though it's Officer Powell.
Mm-hmm.
He's eating Twinkies, just like in the first movie. He has four ready at the desk, and I'm very concerned for Officer Powell's health and well-being. I thought he was cutting back after the first movie.
I mean, especially because it seems like he might be a desk cop now.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he's just sitting in that chair
because
he
hadn't
Twinkies.
Shot anybody in a long time because he had shot somebody innocent on accident.
Right.
And then he had to kill Blondie McFabio dude in the end of the first one.
Back to the desk.
Yep, back to the desk. So then they find out that this guy's been dead for 2 years. This is a black ops group. The tower starts to finally take it seriously, but they're too late because they get tapped into. They find out that all their runway's been shut down. All the planes are now have to circle until they're going to run out of fumes. Or run out of gas.
Yep.
And fly on fumes.
They will run out of fumes.
But the captain is still, like, not helping McClane. And he won't let him back in the tower. So McClane's running around trying to find out down in the basement what to do. And this is where the movie, one of the examples where it makes a nod, which I think it does really well without dipping into parody. It acknowledges the fact that this is an absurd sequel, but it has fun with it. Without going too far, in my opinion. And this sound clip is one of those examples where they're winking at the audience going, yeah, we know this is ridiculous, but you're going to love it anyway.
Man, I can't fucking believe this. Another basement, another elevator. The same shit happened to the same guy twice.
It's so good. I love that. I'm totally okay with that.
Yeah, I mean, that sort of speaks to the whole movie. But again,
yeah.
Like,
He's chasing it.
You could just bow out, man. Like,
but he has that sense of justice. That sense of saving people.
Uh-huh.
That sense of responsibility.
Yeah.
To sacrifice himself. Because think of the shit he goes through in the first one. You know, shoot the glass. And like, oh, that scene where he's pulling the glass out. Damn it, I forgot to bring it. If you love Die Hard, there's a Christmas book that's made to be like a children's book. That's all an illustrated Die Hard, and it's hilarious. And I meant to bring it. I tried to read it to Daisy the other night, and my wife wouldn't let me because it's really violent and has swearing in it.
Sure.
So you know, whatever. I'm a terrible dad, I guess. So then we talked about how in the 3 minute thing, how they go the tech guy takes the SWAT over, and Robert Patrick. They're all really suspiciously painting.
Yeah.
Again, not the best at looking inconspicuous. He's on like a thing like, oh, hey, officer, we're the creepiest painters ever.
Yeah.
And they all blast away the SWAT. It's a brutal gunfight. McClane comes kicking out through the vent after he met Marvin, the world's weirdest janitor.
Janitor, yeah.
Well, I think he's trying to play the role of the limo driver in this, but the limo driver's way cooler in the first one.
Yeah, and also, like,
Marvin's too much for me.
Marvin just, like, has full knowledge of what's going on.
And doesn't tell anyone
and just like hangs out in his cave.
Just waiting for McClane to come back.
Yeah. He's like, I'll be your point person right here.
Right here. I'm not going to radio
to with me.
Yeah. So ridiculous.
You think the janitor would be able to like maneuver the whole, like he knows the ins and outs of whatever.
His character is the, if there's anything I dislike about the movie, it's Marvin. That's the only thing. Everything else I think is awesome. But Marvin, I was like, oh God, just get it. But you need to have some kind of way for him to.
Yeah.
He could have just found the blueprints in the janitor's office.
Right.
But anyway, so McClane kicks open the vent and blasts through it to kill Robert Patrick.
Yeah.
and then jumps down.
Robert Patrick decides to catch it
instead of
the vent, instead of just like moving.
Oh shit! Like, maybe this will be bulletproof. Yeah. Ah, I severely misjudged this situation.
It's like someone yelled "heads up," and he was like, "I got it!
I got it!
I got it!" Got it was it. Just like instinct. He was all state in junior year of high school. His return day.
He kills all the bad guys. Mind you, John McClane with a handgun, because he's that badass, can kill all these bad guys that a full-on SWAT team with semi-automatics couldn't take out.
Right.
Tower blows up. They realize it was all just a trap. That's a trap! And then, where else? The best is where I got confused because my phone autocorrected McClane to McLean. And I was like, who's McLean? Anyways, the best is where the last guy, where he runs out of ammo and he's down on the ground and the guy's kicked him over and he uses the pipe to move the belt to get the last gun and blast the dude before he gets to it. That's such a great moment.
I would have to go back and rewatch this moment. Mm-hmm. But I'm pretty sure he passes over a pipe to grab a further away pipe.
Maybe the other one was shorter.
I don't know.
He just really had his mindset on that pipe.
Yeah, and I guess he had to stretch anyway, so he was like, I might as well start stretching.
Exactly. So then Lorenzo gets on and says McLean's name over the radio, which then outs him as the cowboy, which is what Alan Rickman, Hans Gruber, in the first one, called him. Oh, cowboy. We have a cowboy here. Yippee-ki-yay. So Captain Stewart's like, well, you guys, killing my men wasn't part of the plan, so now I'm going to crash one of the planes. You don't mess with me anymore. And McLean, like the hero he is, tries to go out there and save him. He gets two sticks with cloth on it. He lights them, and he's trying to direct him in, but it's too late. And the plane blows up, kills 230 people. When you really think about it, it's terrible. It's fucking awful.
Awful tragedy.
Because they show all the people on the plane. They show an old lady. They show a kid. They show, like, it's families on there. It's brutal.
Yeah.
And in an action film, it really makes you hate the bad guys. It's like, I know they say kill a dog and you hate him, but kill 230 people on a plane and you know, that's fucking terrible.
Tase a dog and you're just like a funny lady sitting next to the protagonist's wife.
So then the army general shows up and he's like, I'm here to kick some ass. You know, I trained with him, but he's not part of my team anymore, which already, I'm curious for you, since I'd seen it, I couldn't remember if I saw that coming, the twist.
Yeah.
Did you see it coming that they were going to betray him?
I felt like he was bad news.
Okay.
But the way they set it up is like he's the shining beacon of goodness.
Yeah.
And everyone else is either incompetent or terrible. Mm-hmm. And so when the guy comes in and is like,
because he couldn't help.
He couldn't. And he's just like, if he's there and he's interested in catching this guy, since the other people are working against that, if he's moving forward with it, he's got to be a bad guy.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way he's helping.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I got that. I mean, I know this time because I've seen it like four times. Yeah. I was like, I remember this.
Yeah.
But so they're able to go in a backdoor signal to let the planes know, hey, don't listen to anybody else. We're not talking to you. It's terrorists, blah, blah, blah. And the news reporter dude, Dick, gets it and calls his people and is like, we got to get this on the news. You know, this total asshole move. Then he goes back to good old Marvin and realizes Marvin, Deus Ex Machina, you know, convenient McGillicuddy, Marvin has, just going to keep saying gibberish, he has one of the bad guys' radios because that was the problem. They couldn't key in the signature to know, or the code to know what they're saying. And now he knows. Now they figure out it's at the church. They go, wait. First, did we skip the church or no?
No, the church is...
Oh, no. Oh, yeah, so they know that the plane's landing. Yeah. Esperanza's there. He goes, puts the gun up to Esperanza's head after Esperanza's killed both the pilots and landed himself. Which, by the way, he's like, I need... Mayday, mayday. It's like, why don't you just keep the pilots alive until you landed?
Sure.
But turns out he's a pilot as well. So.
Yeah, but he could have kept them alive until they landed.
Yeah.
The pilots were not going anywhere.
No, he could have killed them after.
Yeah.
But it was just showing him be a badass. That's why. You think McLean's got Esperanza. You're like, ah, sweet. There we go. Movie's done. But then Captain Stewart or Colonel Stewart and the other guys show up, start unloading on the plane, which, by the way, is very dangerous for Esperanza because they're just unloading a hail of bullets.
They unload a hail of bullets, and then they throw every single grenade that they have.
Because McClane locks himself in the cockpit to try and shield
and
himself.
One grenade would have killed him.
Yeah.
And then they would have had 20 grenades in
later.
Case they missed.
How many grenades do we have? I think he even says like 8, and they're like, perfect, use them all.
Yeah.
But this is one of the moments that gets a little silly, but still in the realm of possibility,
sure.
where he gets in the ejector seat, gets in, and they're the longest grenade fuses or whatever you call it.
Yeah.
Because it seems like forever.
Yeah, he also kind of like waits for them all to get into the plane. it's like raining on him, and he's like, oh no.
Oh, the 8th one. I better go. Number one, I'd be like, ha!
Right.
Why didn't you just do that?
Right, just throw him out.
Anyways, there's this great shot where it's all over. It's in the anytime you ever see a meme for Die Hard 2, it's this iconic moment where he ejects out and it's blowing up and he comes right up to camera going, aah! And then parachutes down. Why didn't they shoot the parachute at that point?
Well, they were all out of ammunition and all out of grenades.
That's their point. That's their problem. That's their fault.
They screwed it up.
So then He goes back to the army colonel shows up and he's like, you shouldn't have done this. This is our place. And he's like, yeah, well, you got your heads up your ass. He got away, blah, blah, blah. And the army colonel says this.
Now, you're the wrong guy in the wrong place at the wrong time. Story of my life.
So good.
Yeah.
Now, you would say he's chasing it. I would say he's just unlucky.
I would. I would still say both. I would say in the first movie, he's unlucky.
In this one,
and in this movie, he puts himself in this position.
Yeah, yeah. And by the third one, he's dragged into it because it turns out it's Hans Gruber's brother.
Ooh,
spoiler alert!
It's like, Samuel L. Jackson is Hans Gruber's brother.
Yeah,
what?
No,
what?
So then, he goes to the church, and he sneak attacks the one guy. And they're fighting.
Well,
and the guy
he doesn't sneak attack him because the pager goes off.
He's trying to sneak attack.
And
pager
then the
goes
wife
off.
Tries to call him. Or page him. And
a fight ensues. He's getting the shit kicked out of him, and he grabs an icicle and jabs it in the dude's eye, and it's brutal. For like, it looks pretty real.
Yeah.
Still.
And then the ice breaks off, and so it's just like
a chunk.
It's just so good. In his eye. I thought about when that happened, Googling if that was a stalactite or a stalagmite, and I didn't.
Mite. I don't remember.
I don't know.
Technically, it's not because it's ice.
It's ice.
But I get what you're saying. Yeah. Hanging or sticking out.
Right.
But I love that kill. That's one of my favorite badass moments. And then, so this is where the Army General comes back, and there was some suspicious switching of clips to now having blue tape on
it.
And so we're getting the hint something's not right here. And the Army General shows up, and he's a little nicer to McClane this time because now he's like, oh, we found the bad guys. We're all on the same team. We're going to work together. He's putting on a happy face, and he says this.
Yes, I was wrong about you. You're not such an asshole after all.
No, you were right. I'm just your kind of asshole.
Your kind of asshole is the new CBS sitcom. Premiering in February.
They bleep it out, though, like my dad says. Uh-huh. You're kind of bleep hole.
Yeah.
Wonder what would that show be?
Don't trust the bee in apartment 23.
Yeah.
That's another one.
But why are we so prude with swear words? Who cares?
Yeah.
You're kind of asshole. What would that be? Like it would be a guy who, who needed a new roommate off Craigslist.
Yeah.
And found one, but the guy's a total dick. And then he realizes, and this guy's kind of a nebbish dude. He's just kind of, he's an introvert. He stays at home a lot. And this asshole ends up bringing him out of his shell and showing him how to be good with the ladies, how to get more friends. And it turns out he's your kind of asshole.
Sold. I'm in.
Let's make it.
I'm in.
It's every sitcom ever.
Yeah, I know.
So every sitcom ever should be called Your Kind of Asshole. Okay.
I mean, there's an opportunity there.
There is.
If you want to be edgy but still do the same sitcom.
I don't want to do a sidebar, but I'm going to
real quick.
I've said on this show before, and now I can prove it after seeing Creed 2. If you go back and watch the Movie Fights episode I was on where we pitched a Creed sequel, I pitched exactly what they did, and I can't prove they stole it, but I can't prove they didn't.
I mean, you can prove they stole it by the fact that it's the exact same thing that you said.
It's pretty great.
Yeah.
No, but it was everything I wanted the sequel to be, and I was so stoked. Anyways, go see Creed 2. Sidebar. I don't think they stole it from me. I think it's just the most logical and awesome way to do a sequel.
So now we're split.
Perfect.
Yeah.
So then there's this big shootout at the church between the army and the bad guys, and it's suspicious because nobody's getting killed. They escape on the snow speeders, I like to call them snow speeders, snowmobiles. And John McClane goes after him. He's going toe-to-toe with one of them. His is getting all shot up as he's turning to the side to block it, which, by the way, guy has a terrible aim because he's shooting him with a machine gun really close distance.
Well, but with blanks.
Well, no, the other guy wasn't. Oh, yeah. He had real ammo. Yeah. And John McClane's like, I know, I got him. Oh, I was so close. They shoot at his snow speeder. He jumps over a semi-truck that's driving by, and it blows up. And again, they think he's dead, but don't really check.
No. Why would they?
Why would they? Because they got other things to do.
I suppose.
They don't have any more grenades.
They're singular threat to them. They can't take the time just to be like, that guy's dead.
Send the dude over that you were going to...
John Leguizamo.
Oh, I forgot the guy that they slit his throat because he was not part of their original
crew. That's
how
he found out that they were the bad guys. Yeah. That comes after this.
Yeah. They could have sent him out and been like, oh, he's not dead.
Right.
What a jerk. What a bad guy that dude. And poor kid.
I know. He just wanted to do something good.
230 and one people were killed now. He's another one. He's the additional.
Yep.
And that was really strange. 230 and 1. 230 and 1.
No one says numbers that way. I'm not sure.
So reporter, being a total dick, hence his name Dick and Richard, he's in there. He's giving this really bullshit, like impassioned speech about like, I'm sacrificing everything. And we actually have a clip of that right before he gets tased.
But at least the truth is not among the hostages, because I, Richard Thornburg, just happened to be here to put his life and talent on the line for humanity and country. And if this should be my final broadcast.
Amen to that, Dick.
So gotcha. Good. So good. Well, I forgot one of my favorite moments is when McClane goes and argues with the captain again. And he's like, the colonel, the army's working with them. And he's like, yeah, whatever, McClane. They got Christmas. Blah, blah, blah. Just completely still. McClane's every hunch of his has been right up until this moment. Why would you still not believe him?
So this is one
and
of my...
And then the blank moment happens, but keep going.
I just want to say, this is one of my biggest gripes of all action movies. Mm-hmm. Is that when the hero, like, obviously they don't know he's the hero. But when he's doing the right thing over and over and over and over and is the only one surviving and is the only one out there, I would just stand behind him and be like, I'm following. Like, what should I do right now?
Yeah. Did you ever watch 24?
Yeah.
That was like every season there was a character where you're like, God, come on!
Right.
He's saved the world 7 times! He's saved L.A., D.C., New York. What else do you need?
Right. There's always someone. My, like, most... annoyed moment of this was in Bourne Ultimatum in the beginning when he's like, he meets the journalist and they're like, there's snipers everywhere and they're trying to kill Jason Bourne.
Yeah.
And the journalist is like just there with him. And he takes the journalist through like this big maze off, like, not through the city, but like through the train station or whatever. And he's right every single time and they survive the entire way. And then the journalist gets nervous and just like runs into the crowd and gets shot down. And I was just like, why wouldn't you just listen to him? So anyway, why wouldn't you listen to John McClane?
Why wouldn't you listen to John McClane? Mm-hmm. You know what he did in the Nakatomi Plaza.
Right.
So that moment's awesome, though, where Carmine is being a total dick, and he finally gets through to him because he unloads the clip of blanks at him, and Carmine's just like, ah, ah! Meanwhile, no other cop shoots him.
No.
They just pull their guns and go like, shit, what do we... Wait, there's no bullets. What's happening? And he's like, they're blanks, you idiot. That moment's so badass.
Yeah.
And I wish Carmine, because he's such an asshole character, I wish he had shit himself or something in that moment, which may have been a lowbrow moment.
He wasn't tased, so...
He wasn't tased, so he didn't shit himself, as Stephen Mortimer proved to us. So then McClane gets in Carmine's car, and it turns out Carmine's brother, of course, is the dickhead cop from the beginning. Merry Christmas, that guy. They immediately get in a car wreck because everybody's panicking.
Uh-huh.
So McClane goes and finds the reporter, and he gets in the news helicopter, has them helicopter down. But before that, we know from the first movie, because he's nervous about flying, and that's how he gets told to put his bare feet on the carpet and rub his toes, and that's why he's barefoot the whole movie. So we know McClane doesn't like flying, so this is a callback to that. Clip 8.
I'm not a cowboy, right, too rough?
I don't like to fly.
Then what are you doing here?
I don't like to lose, either.
Maybe that's it.
Yeah.
He's wanting this. He doesn't like to lose. And losing lives means he's losing.
And maybe if he did take a job with SWAT or with the Army or with CIA or any of those things, he would have to fly more. So maybe that's what it is.
That's what it is. Maybe we just solved it.
I want to be in a city.
Solved it.
Yeah.
So there's this perilous moment where Esperanza, Colonel Stewart, the Army, everybody's on the plane that's been fueled up and ready to take off. It's gone up the runway. They only have lit up this one runway for them. McClane lands on, has them lower down.
Yeah.
He jumps out of the helicopter onto the wing of the plane, shoves his jacket into the flap that makes them take off. I'm not an aeronautical engineer.
But it's a good thing the runway is 7 miles long.
It's just like the runway in Fast and Furious 6, yeah, where it's like 40 miles.
It is long enough for him to have two separate fistfights.
Which I am perfectly okay
on
with.
On the wing.
The best is, well, and I'm glad they justify it, because as they're about to go out, they're like, don't shoot, because the wing is loaded with fuel, because otherwise Colonel Stewart's just standing there watching his buddy get his ass beat, just holding the machine gun like, ha 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 ha, you know, I'm going to wait my turn.
Right.
But it makes sense, because he should have brought a more precise weapon than an automatic. You know?
Sure.
That could have, because there were several times he could have shot McClane when he was up top and the dude was below. But there's a brutal fist fight. They're knocking each other around. Guy gets kicked down. Army dude gets kicked down around the side of it and is hanging off of the engine, right? The side engine?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And McClane says this right before kicking him.
I got enough friends!
And was there a lead up to why he says friend? Like, did he call him friend ever?
I forget what it was, but I think there was something that prompted that.
Okay, because there's a moment, though, where he takes a pretty long moment to say that. And it almost looks like he's like, what's my one-liner? What's my one-liner?
Yeah.
I got enough friends! You know, that's been me on Facebook lately, because I have way too many people. Like, when it's my birthday, people wish me happy birthday. I have no idea who, like, 30% or more are, because it's just, like, people I met at an audition one time. Or, like, yeah, you went, like, ad crazy when you were single and just like, hey, I want to have friends. And now when people add me, I feel bad because they're like, hey, did you check my Facebook ad? And I just go,
I got enough friends!
Yeah.
And then they get mad.
Well,
and I'm like, hey, you're 15 years too
late,
man.
Everything's fine.
I don't want to add anybody
else. We can be real life friends.
Yeah, I like real life friends better anyway.
This is actually, so it's funny that you took this clip, because this is actually not from Die Hard 2.
Oh, shit, really?
Yeah, this was a meeting that Bruce Willis had with the producers of Friends, trying to get him to come back and do the final season. And he was like, I do movies now. And they were like, we just need you for 2 episodes. And he was like,
I got enough friends.
That's pretty great.
Yeah.
It's much better than mine. I love that you corrected your spelling of yippee-ki-yay. Thank you, Steve. Thank you. I was going to call that out, which means I think I've been spelling it wrong every time I tweet it. I didn't know there was 2 P's. Huh, you learn something new every day.
Yeah.
Anyways, so he kicks the dude, falls into the engine, and it blasts him to bits, and blood sprays out all over. Which, by the way, wouldn't that make the engine
just... Yeah, it would be, yeah.
Because, like, I know birds, like in Sully, birds hit the engine, and it took it out.
Yeah, that would down
this
the
plane.
This
is a big dude.
Sure. Yeah.
They wouldn't have been able to take it. So the fact that they're still like, well, guess we can still take off.
Yeah, everything's still balanced here.
Exactly.
Probably not.
But it's more fun to watch the whole plane blow up. So they have Colonel Stewart comes out. He does his Tai Chi thing, clothed this time, because it's cold out. And
right.
He doesn't want to catch the
pneumonia. That's why he wasn't as good with it.
Yeah, he's
that's
better
it
when he has the dingle.
When
he has the dangle.
That's right.
So they fight. Boom, boom, boom. McClane gets kicked off. But not before he rips the gas line open,
yes,
and it's spewing gas. They all think, ha-ha, we're lighting cigars. We're going to be like the prequel to Con Air here. We're getting free. And then McClane lights his lighter, which somehow he kept on him this entire time, which I love.
Sure.
And play clip number 20. What?
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
It was actually clip number 10, but I like that it's 20.
You made it 20.
I made it 20.
Yeah.
Here we go. Can we play it one more time, because it's so good.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Which is notoriously what they edited in the PG-13 Live Free or Die Hard, where he goes, yippee-ki-yay, mother, and then he fires the gun and it blanks. That's why I've only watched the unrated cut, because they actually add it back in. You can't neuter it. That's why we had to swear today. If you don't think this is a Christmas movie, once again, I say to you,
yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
I love this movie. So anyways, everybody's happy. He's back with Holly. The cop tears up his ticket, which is the least of his concerns at this moment.
Right. But I like, not to be the bearer of bad news, but that there's a carbon of that ticket, and it's probably downtown. And it wasn't just a ticket. They towed his car. So he's going to have to get that car back at some point.
That's all the time we have to talk about Die Hard 2, Die Harder. Until next time, Jesse, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Too Much Jesse, and for sketch at The Prom Losers.
You can find me at The Ben Begley on Twitter and Instagram. And, you know, we might start throwing out some Christmas sketches from yesteryear that Jesse and I did. So keep a lookout for those. We have a ton of them, and they are ridiculous. So I'm going to start shamelessly promoting them again to try and get some lesser viewed videos viewed. Nice. Until next time, Merry Holidays. And what is your guilty movie pleasure?
Producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network. The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.